Hi, I'm Gary Knoll. I'd like to welcome you to this program. Today, we're going to talk about how a grape-based compound kills colon cancer stem cells. Penn State University, that's good news. I'll go into detail in a moment. Also today, a special in-depth investigative report challenging Wikipedia. Once again, this is number 74 in our ongoing series of investigative reporting articles. This article is entitled Wikipedia's Culture of Editorial Sadism. Yes, it's that serious. And I'll lay it all out. Also today, after health and nutrition, and then that commentary, I'm going to present an article that was written 3 years ago by a gentleman named Paul Street. Now, if you don't know Paul, he's an independent progressive policy researcher, an award-winning journalist, historian, and in fact, he has published in the New York Times and CNN, Al Jazeera, RTV, the Chicago Tribune, WLS, which is an ABC Chicago station. He's been around. He's an author. He's a scholar. And he's very concerned, at least in 2017 when he wrote this piece, about what happens when a group that seemingly is excluding everyone else from, let's say, us caring about them. Black Lives Matter. Well, he argues, well, what about Native American lives? What about all women's lives? What about all the whites who are not entitled? They come from a large amount of suffering in their background. Don't they count too? And then he dug deeper, and he found out some things that disturbed him. So he's sharing those. At a time when Black Lives Matter is considered more favorably than either the Democrat or Republican Party, either candidate, the mainstream media. So does it deserve this attention? And any time it's challenged, it seems though that person's reputation is attacked. Are we at a time when we are censoring speech? We're afraid to talk about issues and people, organizations? Are they above reproach? Well, he lays it out. It's his opinion, but I believe that we should have open forums. After all, this is from a guy who has done some outstanding work his whole career. With the he was the vice president of research and planning at the Chicago Urban League, where he published two major grant funding studies, The Vicious Circle, Race, Prison, Jobs, and Community in Chicago, Illinois, and The Nation. And still separate, Unequal Race, Place, Policy, and State of Black Chicago. So he's got his creds. I mean, he's credible. But is he politically correct? Are you allowed to challenge anyone today if they are considered the woke group? So that's what we're going to do. And by the way, he was awarded the first prize in the category Political Commentary National at the annual Southern California Journalism Awards. Also receiving the National Council on Crime and Delinquency Award. So let's see if anyone that would attack him has the same background, or do we, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Would Martin Luther King be attacked today? Would Malcolm X be attacked today? Would Gandhi be attacked today? Would those who advocate nonviolence be attacked today? They were in their own lifetimes. These are questions that need to be addressed, but in an open forum, with no censorship. So that's what we're doing. But we begin with the latest on health and healing. And in that respect, a lot of you have been doing something right. You've been drinking grape juice, eating grapes, and if you're doing that, then you're getting a compound, grape seed extract. That's in the seed in the grape skin. Plus you're getting resveratrol, R-E-S-V-E-R-A-T-R-O-L. Resveratrol. That's a very powerful polyphenol. And according to this Professor Vannamala, Associate Professor of Food Science, Penn State University, in a major study, they found that resveratrol and grapeseed extract, quote, the combination of resveratrol and grapeseed extract is very effective at killing colon cancer cells. And what we're learning is the combination of these compounds is not toxic to healthy cells. and this was published in the BMC's Complementary and Alternative Medicine Peer Review Journal. And that could pave the way for clinical testing of the compounds on human colon cancer. That is terrific news. Also today, a separate study from the University of Castilla-La Mancha in Spain, resveratrol differently modulates a group of what is called a metabotropic glutamate receptors. Well, in lay language, it just means it helps protect your neurons. It helps protect your brain. It's neuroprotective in this particular scientific study. So we know that neurodegenerative diseases like Alzheimer's disease have been intensely investigated, but not with resveratrol. So resveratrol, which is a natural polyphenolic compound, has neuroprotective properties for human health. So that's good. So take your resveratrol, eat your grapes, drink your grape juice, and protect your brain. Also from St. George University in London, a good study on cannabis killing leukemia cells. Now, a new study has confirmed yet another positive use of cannabis. A study has revealed that cannabinoids, those are the non-psychoactive ingredients, can successfully kill leukemia cells. Now, cannabis has a long history of its ability to kill cancer, but the new revelation regarding leukemia is important because the disease is a cancer of bone marrow and other blood-forming organs. So one more piece of the puzzle that we can put in there, and that's great. Also from Baylor College of Medicine, they're talking about the discovery of a premature epigenomic aging acts like a sleeper cell that is awakened by Western-style diet. Now, the epigenome is sometimes referred to as the software or the operating system of the genome. It comprises small chemical modifications to the DNA and the proteins that make up our chromosomes and controls the activity of all genes within the genome. Well, what happens is if we have a healthy plant-based diet, we keep these, let's say, sleeper cells asleep. But when you have an unhealthy Western diet that most Americans do, that's not good because then you wake this cell up and that can prematurely age you. So you want to live a longer life, eat a healthy diet. You want to live a shorter life and be sick, turn on the sleeper cell and it hurts you. From the National Cancer Research Institute in Japan, quercetin, Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N, that's what you get when you eat apples with the skin and onions, for example. It helps the body resensitize so chemotherapy can better get at and kill the breast cancer cells. So that's good where something natural, non-toxic, helps the body through cancer. From Heidelberg University in Germany and the University of Padova in Italy, using a smartphone can cause structural differences in your brain. That's not good. And children entering the world today are being birthed into a sea of technology that their parents never grew up with. As a result, we don't really fully appreciate the long-term consequences these technologies could have on these generations as they age. But an article published in Addictive Behavior showed that those smartphones can really play havoc with a child's brain. So I'm concerned, I hope you are, and I hope that you realize that's essential. And finally, from Osaka City University, which is in Japan, the Mediterranean diet, which is a very healthy diet, is linked to rheumatoid arthritis benefits. So if you have the healthy monounsaturated fats, let's say like the olive oil, and that can help you. But if you have the meat in the diet, that can exacerbate rheumatoid arthritis. So take a healthy Mediterranean diet and help yourself with rheumatoid arthritis. This was published in the peer review journal Clinical Nutrition. That's the latest on health and nutrition, because we're going a little short today because these other topics we're going to take over are a little more, let's say they're a little more time consuming. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, the original independent investigative reporting article about Wikipedia, and please go to prn.fm for several reasons. First, because we have over 74 articles that deconstruct the lack of legitimacy in our opinion of Wikipedia being a real encyclopedia. We believe that it is a propaganda tool for the deep state and special interests, and it's edited by people with no background, wrong background, and anonymous on topics that no legitimate encyclopedia would engage in. So download that article and share it. Plus, I have a lot, I think 38 or 39 videos up there on topics that enliven us and help us through these tough times. Some really good ones. So they're free. Take advantage of them. Go to prn.fm. Well, here's some information that you won't see positively reviewed on Wikipedia or anywhere else. My cookbook, my new cookbook called Curing the Incurable. Now, we've been out of it, but I managed to get a couple hundred copies. And I'm sorry that we didn't have it over the last 6 months, but now we do. This has four awards right on the cover, some of the highest awards in cooking that you can get. What is Curing the Incurable Cookbook? Well, it's several things. First and foremost, Curing the Incurable Cookbook is a phenomenal vegan gourmet cookbook. It breaks everything down to make it really easy for people who have historically not spent a lot of time in the kitchen. I'm sure many of the listeners who come from French backgrounds, Italian backgrounds, Spanish backgrounds, Latino backgrounds, you're pretty good chefs. Some are remarkable chefs. But what if you didn't grow up in a house where cooking was a big deal? Eating was, but not cooking. And what about all the people who've been living on junk foods? So this is a way of taking hundreds of recipes with a photograph of how it should be plated and then making recipes that the average person can follow. These are helpful to your immune system. These are empowering, loaded with enzymes and phytonutrients and antioxidants, and they're delicious beyond imagination. They're beautiful to look at, easy to prepare. That's part of the book. It's a big book, by the way. But the other part of the book is a whole lot of doctors, board-certified physicians, who are able to reverse diseases in themselves, and frequently those who weren't sick, but most of the doctors I interviewed were. And when that diet worked on reversing their own diseases, then they worked with their patients and helped reverse their diseases. We're talking about heart disease and cancer and arthritis and dementia. It's all here. So this book has not been written before. This is unique and original. So the protocols for each of these physicians is in the chapters. Dean Ornish has a chapter where he reversed 9 out of 9 people who had heart disease so bad they were going to have a heart transplant, but not after taking his protocol, a vegan protocol, exercise and stress management. And also, what are the best foods to alkalize the body to help overcome pain? What are the best foods with the highest fiber? What are the foods that have the highest nutrient content? All the way, what are the best spices and seasonings? It's all laid out. Everything that you need to be healthier is in Curing the Incurable Cookbook. And it's a big coffee table size book. It's beautiful. So here's how you get it. And with shipping and handling all together at $62, they're limited in supply. Call 877-627-5065. That's 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. All right, for the Curing the Incurable Cookbook. Also, for those of you who have been waiting for Suprema C to come back in inventory, it's back today. Suprema C, the high-potency bioflavonoid buffered mineral ascorbated cherry chewables. All right, this has got the magnesium ascorbate, zinc ascorbate, potassium ascorbate, manganese ascorbate, acerola cherry, delicious tasting, and 500 milligrams of vitamin C per tablet. So you can call now and get your Suprema C chewable. All right, and I'm not limiting it, because we managed, thank goodness, for the first time to get a large enough a quantity in. So for your Supremacy Chewable, 877-627-5065. Cherry's Supremacy Chewable back in stock, 877-627-5065. I want to share something with you that I believe has to be dealt with, and that is dealing with the biases within Wikipedia and their culture, which is a vile culture of many of the editors, who, if you are a person of faith and you believe they in any religion, they're going to go after you. If you believe in any alternative therapy, they're going to go after you. If now, I'm one of the ultimate liberals, but when the liberal leaders like the Clintons betrayed our mission to help those to stop wars, to have ambassadors of peace, not the military-industrial complex, I said no, and that's when I created the principle of progressivism. I'm not the inventor of it, but I certainly had the first progressive radio network, which is the number one in the world, and that's why we're heard all over the world and all the other stations. I want to thank those stations for carrying us. And a shout-out to the station up in Woodstock. When I get back to New York and when we're able to have a screening, I'll premiere two of my new films up there for you. We'll do one in the afternoon, one in the evening. Last time we did it was just a year ago. In fact, it was a year ago almost this week. We had a packed theater. It was a movie theater. Not everybody could get in. This time we'll have people make reservations. So I believe that we're being controlled by special interest, like Google, Wikipedia, Twitter, and, of course, Facebook. All of these have their own agendas. And from my perspective, the most dangerous is Wikipedia and Google, which work together. In fact, Google funds Wikipedia also, because they can take the truth that could serve all of us well, and they alter it, or they can denigrate it. They take people who have done so much to help so many people in this world, like my guest coming up after this, Dr. Rupert Sheldrake, and they denigrate them to where you lose book contracts, nobody wants to be around you because, oh, you're one of those people that Wikipedia says is not legitimate. So we've been fighting back. We're about to start our litigation, and we've taken this long to create the litigation because we've gone to many attorneys who said you can't take Wikipedia on directly, but there's another way of getting at the editors who are not indemnified, and that's what we've been doing. We first had to find out their true identity, and we have done that. So this is an article entitled Wikipedia's Culture of Editorial Sadism. I want you to think well on this. Perhaps the greatest farce in the modern history of technology is the perception of Wikipedia as a legitimate encyclopedia. It has none of the qualifications that we could find as such, but has all the characteristics of a compromised propaganda machine disguised as an encyclopedia. Now, an authentic encyclopedia is transparent. Users can view the qualifications and expertise of its contributors. There's no personal animus or bias. If anything, these are people who are actually conscious of the facts regarding any given subject. There's no whitewashing, no recasting, no repurposing of negative content into positive opinions or vice versa. If an error is detected, it can be quickly corrected. Now compare that with Wikipedia, where there are over 100,000 editors who are mostly anonymous. Expertise in the field that any of these anonymous contributors are editing is not required. That's odd. So you mean you're going to criticize someone who, well, like Deepak Chopra, has had 50 years in a field helping people, who's written dozens of peer review articles, who's been universally accepted in his field by his peers as someone who contributes to the field, and yet you who have no background, no expertise, no knowledge of science, no knowledge of complementary anything, you're going to judge him? Since when did that become acceptable? And you're going to stay anonymous so none of us know your real biases? that you are biased, that we know. But the motivation behind that, that we do not know. So the hypothesis that through Wikipedia's backdoor platforms, the discussion, debate, and argument can eventually reach a consensus that reflects the facts and truth on a subject is not only unrealistically idealistic, but notably naive. This is conspicuously true for one subject that dwarfs all others, health and medicine, where content is radically recast as either acceptable, refutable, or worse, assailed and slandered. Content that represents the medical orthodoxy and based upon pharmaceutical paradigm is acceptable. Everything else is rejected and degraded under sarcastic terms like pseudoscience, quackery, or lunatic charlatanry. Under Wikipedia's editorial rules, tendentious editing is forbidden. This editing is blatantly partisan. It's biased. It's malicious. And it violates the principles of a neutral point of view. Other examples of tendentious editing include editorial warfare and vandalism, gaming the system, abusive language and behavior, misuse and distortion of content and references, unwarranted censorship, and banning of editors who make efforts to appeal to a neutral point of view. But that's what it's supposed to be, a neutral point of view. And since the encyclopedia's parent organization, the Wikimedia Foundation, does not conduct direct oversight on the content that eventually reaches the site's pages, Wikipedia has turned into a Ochlarchy, O-C-H-L-O-C-R-A-C-Y. Now, you may not have heard that of this. It comes from the Greek. It means a form of governance and majoritism that adheres to the chaos of mob rule. Think of the French Revolution. Think of the Robespierrean courts, where a person would be brought in, some people would argue what the person has done deserves to die, and the truth is irrelevant. The evidence is irrelevant. You've decided, you two or three or one or 20, that person should die, and hence they die. That is what it means to have a whole group of people who are so close-minded, so radicalized, so arrogant that they engage on a daily basis in this ochlarchy, and as a result, then you end up having no intellectual acumen, no expertise on a subject. Instead, it has degenerated into merit-based aristocracy that is determined by the number of entries contributed and the successful edits. It doesn't matter if the edits are accurate or not, biased or not. Evidently, the encyclopedia's culture of editorial hostility and malignity and harassment and toxic behavior has overpowered the foundation's capacity to rein it in. Why? Because in May, it was announced, not to the general public, but to the editors, that new rules and a code of conduct would be drafted to curtail harassment. Oh, it went far beyond that. Because if any of you have ever gotten on the back side of Wikipedia to look what the public is not made aware of the constant infighting, the internecine conflict, the hate campaigns, you think, wow, how is this supposed to represent any kind of objective journalism in history and scholarship? Well, it doesn't. Now, was this motivated by the 72 articles Richard Gale and I have written, the 9 lawyer letters to the board of directors showing what is wrong about everything about the foundation, which is everything? I don't know. Just interesting it came out at the same time. But right now, that's where we're at. Remember, legitimate encyclopedias engage none of the behavior that we have seen, in our opinion, on Wikipedia. So we live in a time when the health of Americans is declining exponentially. Life expectancy has reversed itself. Moreover, never before have more people died from medical error, misdiagnosis, and the overprescribing of medications. Every 24 hours, at least 4,000 Americans experience a serious adverse drug reaction that requires hospitalization. and an additional 770,000 people suffer from these adverse drug reactions during their hospital stay. So not only is it the drug reaction gets you into a hospital, then in the hospital you have a lot of people, over 770,000, who are suffering in the hospital with adverse drug reactions. In fact, the CDC's very conservative estimate that 70,000 deaths were directly associated with prescription complications and overdoses. By the way, for perspective, that's far more than all of American casualties in the Vietnam War, and far greater than deaths due to influenza, pneumonia, alcoholic liver disease, firearms, and motor vehicle accidents. Prescription deaths also outnumber illegal drug overdoses, and newer medications, according to Harvard University to Edmund Safra Center for Ethics, are becoming more deadly. This is citing the center's paper. Quote, few know that systemic reviews of hospital charts found that even properly prescribed drugs, aside from misprescribing, overdosing, or self-prescribing, cause about 1.9 million hospitalizations a year. Another 840,000 hospitalized patients are given drugs that cause serious adverse reactions, for a total of 2.74 million serious adverse drug reactions. And about 128,000 people die from drugs prescribed to them, end quote, is systematic instead of systemic. Now, imagine this. These are ultra-conservative figures. Why? Because as we know, do you remember when people were being critical, and rightly so, about the police officers stood by and watched a man who should not have been arrested die because of a police engaging in an immoral and illegal act, and they did nothing, and people were pleading? Now, make that times 100 in hospitals where nurses and doctors protect one another. So you never know the truth in the vast majority of cases of who did what that was wrong but never got reported, hence it's not a part of statistic. And the same is also true for vaccines. I interviewed the former commissioner of the FDA, Dr. Kessler, and he stated that only about 1% at the low end, 10% the high end, of adverse reactions to vaccines are ever recorded. So let's just say we went up to 50% of vaccines' adverse effects being reported. Well, then you would have an epidemic. You would have such a high epidemic, then no longer would we have the 1996, the act that prevented the vaccine makers from being sued, and as a result, they would be held accountable. That was 1986. So our documentation of the U.S. epidemic of medicines casualties is far greater, closer to the mortality rate of heart disease and cancer. This was based upon a 5-year study and documented in an earlier book, Death by Medicine. The article is still up on our website. And besides prescription opiates and antidepressants and amphetamines and anticoagulants and anabolic steroids and ADHD stimulants and antibacterials rank high among iatrogenic deaths. And this ignores the many millions of injuries due to unnecessary prescriptions and clinical infections and surgeries and hospitalizations ordered for erroneous reasons but enormous profits. I'm sure you're all familiar by now that one gentleman who was fortunate enough, and thank goodness, to survive the COVID virus was given a bill of $1,100,000. Oh, and they're serious. They'll go after him. And they'll go after anyone. Why? What in the world could they have been giving him that cost that amount of money? Well, it was not about what they gave him. It was about how much they could charge. And all of medicine is about profiteering. Whether you kill a patient or not, you won't expect to be paid. Well, if we only paid doctors for succeeding and helping a patient get well or curing their disease, we'd probably have about 95% less doctors. That's the way the world is. Conventional drug-based criterion for practicing medicine is the only course of treatment Wikipedia advocates, while safer alternatives are disparaged and defined as quackery. One glaring example of Wikipedia's disdain and hatred towards alternative medicine is this disgusting and inaccurate treatment of traditional Chinese medicine, which has been successfully practiced for thousands of years. The same true of Indian Ayurvedic medicine. And recently, the Chinese health authorities have drafted legislation that would ban any person or organization who criticizes or ridiculed traditional Chinese medicine. So will they ban Wikipedia? I hope so. This comes on the heels of traditional Chinese medicines being used alongside conventional medicine for treating COVID-19 cases with far more success than anything being done in the United States. By the way, they were the first to use intravenous vitamin C in two separate hospitals, and it helped the patients recover quickly with no deaths. Over 92% of the Chinese COVID patients have been treated with traditional Chinese formulas, either alone or in combination with Western therapies. And unlike conventional pharmaceutical-based medicine, traditional Chinese medicine, Ayurvedic, focuses on diagnosing the underlying cause of an illness and symptoms, a method that Western science has yet to fully understand and implement. Nevertheless, the empirical evidence supporting these ancient medical modalities is substantial. A recent paper in the Review of Molecular Medicine by the China Academy of Chinese Medical Sciences and the prestigious National University of Singapore concluded that traditional Chinese medicine, quote, represents a vast and untapped resource of modern medicine. This is a medical system that catalogs over 13,000 different medicinal ingredients and over 100,000 unique decoctions and recipes. And yet, you would never learn anything about the benefits of traditional Chinese medicine, Ayurvedic, and multiple other non-drug-based and natural therapies, including chiropractic, homeopathy, naturopathy, energy medicine, and faith-based practices, if you were to rely upon Wikipedia. It's traditional Chinese medicine page promulgates unfounded lies that, quote, there is no high-quality clinical evidence that traditional Chinese medicine is safe and effective for treating any disease, end quote. My goodness. The page's editors are determined that Chinese medicine, traditional Chinese medicine, be portrayed as a pseudoscience. This is despite the several hundred thousand peer-reviewed articles cataloged in the National Institute of Health Library and Medicine that deal with traditional Chinese medicine and acupuncture and medicinal plants, a voluminous collection that Wikipedia editors either cherry-pick or select to advocate their anti-traditional Chinese medicine prejudices. Why is this allowed when being biased or prejudiced against or for something is not allowed on Wikipedia? It even fails to mention that the 2015 Nobel Prize winner in medicine was awarded to the first Chinese woman scientist, Tu Yu, for discovering traditional Chinese medicine's remedy, artemisia, as a basis for the development of an antimalarial drug. Efforts to bring balance to the traditional Chinese medicine and other alternative health pages are futile. It can't be done. We believe there is a very good reason, as we have reported previously, that Wikipedia's co-founder Jimmy Wells and the foundation seemingly support libelous, malicious attacks on complementary and alternative medicine. It may require a concerted legal campaign to hold the Wikimedia Foundation accountable with a furor of lawsuits charging the organization for castigating and destroying the careers of tens of thousands of health practitioners and systemic censorship, and serving as an operation for social media propaganda rather than hiding behind the ruse of being a reliable encyclopedia. For years, it was official policy of the American Medical Association that chiropractic was an unscientific cult and made every effort to destroy chiropractic completely. Nevertheless, chiropractors succeeded in winning a lawsuit against the AMA and 10 of the major medical groups in the United States for participating in a conspiracy in violation of the Sherman Antitrust Act and restraint of trade. The court subsequently ruled that chiropractic was a legitimate therapeutic science. So all those years, those decades of attacking chiropractic, they were all wrong. Today, the mainstream media voices agreement with Wikipedia in denying or ignoring complementary and alternative medicine altogether. Perhaps the media is too lazy or just maybe intellectually insufficient to do any research, or simply they lack common sense and reason, or maybe all the above. or perhaps more realistic, it is tied to the corporations of all things, pharmaceutical drugs, private insurance, GMOs, vaccines, and the rollout of 5G technology. As the media is grossly biased and compromised by private interests, so do we believe is Wikipedia. We do not need to travel far to discover an army of expert medical voices and health professionals articulating this disapproval of the pharmaceutical industry's control over federal health care policies and the crookedness in peer-reviewed medical journals to push unsafe or ineffective drugs in the FDA's review process. The title of the former head of the Danish Cochrane Collaboration and a world-respected professor of medicine, Professor Peter Gochi, wrote a book called Deadly Medicines and Organized Crime, How Big Pharma Has Corrupted Healthcare. And it tells the whole story. It's a tale about medical-induced injury and death when only dealing with pharmaceutical drugs and unnecessary medical procedures at a time when prevention and non-pharmaceutical therapies are voiceless in a nation's healthcare discussion. And finally, despite Wikipedia's failure to be accurate and neutral about the subjects that have immediate impact on the lives and well-being of its users, it has been a successful tool for the deep state in special corporate interest. In similar ways, it serves as a public relations operation for the drug industry, just as the Hill Knowlton PR firm did for the tobacco industry in the 1950s, except under the cloak of being an authentic encyclopedia. The Foundation has condoned it being used as a weapon to silence and lessen the impact of people such as Robert Kennedy Jr., Deepak Chopra, Craig Murray, John Pilger, and my guest in a moment, Rupert Sheldrake, and Nobel laureate Luc Montagnier, by characterizing them as, well, in just derogatory language. An agent provocateur, a sock puppet, or astroturf group who succeeds in climbing the editorial ladder can sabotage and control the pages of important dissent and ethical people in order to promote ulterior and highly prejudicial agendas. There might be dozens of such editors standing at the gates of a page with their personal agendas to libel and make efforts to destroy the lives of others who they happen to disagree with. Now, almost after 15 years of neglect and incompetence, the Foundation is making a minor effort to deal with the epidemic of editors' harassment and malice. However, in doing so, it also acknowledged that its entire system and modus operandi is rotten to the core, a repository of chaos and editorial sadism, in our opinion. It is also running massively convoluted games. If you doubt any of this, ask any of the many thousands of individuals who Wikipedia has slandered and libeled. Ask them. Wikipedia's argument is that, well, if your character has been assassinated by any of its editors, then simply follow the editorial protocol to correct the errors. Nonsense. But for thousands of people, this has repeatedly been proven to be a futile exercise. Since the entire Wikipedia model is fraudulent, such efforts are shams. No one in the alternative health profession is capable of correcting their biographies. Wikipedia skeptics are the judge, jury, and executioner, and the Wikipedia Foundation likes it that way. We're finishing off our program today with an article from Paul Street. Paul has a very distinguished background as an activist, investigative journalist, historian. He has been there to defend the unions. He's been there to defend the poor. He's gone after human rights abusers. We're talking about for decades. And we came across a Truth Dig article that he wrote. Now, we're going to have him on live, but I want you to hear an article he wrote on October 29, 2017. Agree or disagree, he's making some interesting points. This is from Martin Luther King Jr., 1968. The Black Revolution is much more than a struggle for the rights of Negroes. It is forcing Americans to face all of its interracial flaws. Racism, poverty, militarism, and materialism. It is exposing evils that are rooted deeply in the whole structure of our society. It reveals systematic rather than superficial flaws and suggest that radical reconstruction of society itself is the real issue to be faced, end quote. Now to Paul Street. He says, you don't have to be one of those conspiratorial curmudgeons who reduces every sign of popular protest to George Soros money to acknowledge that much of what passes for popular and progressive grassroots activism has been co-opted, taken over, or created by corporate America, the corporate-funded non-profit industrial complex, and Wall Street's good friend, the Democratic Party, long known to leftists as, quote, the graveyard of social movements. This corporatization of activism, and that was from University of British Columbia's Professor Peter Duverghe, is ubiquitous across much of what passes for the left in the U.S. today. What about the racialist group Black Lives Matter, recipient of a mammoth $100 million grant from the Ford Foundation last year, sparked by the racist security guard and police killing of Trayvon Martin, Mike Brown, and Eric Gardner? Black Lives Matter has achieved uncritical support across the progressive spectrum, where it is almost reflexively cited as an example of noble and radical grassroots activism in the streets. That is a mistake. I first started wondering where Black Lives Matter stood on the AstroTurf versus grassroots scale when I read an essay published 3 years ago in The Feminist Wire by Alicia Garza, one of Black Lives Matter's three black lesbian and veteran public interest careerist founders, and her story of the Black Lives Matter movement. Garza wrote, quote, black lives, not just all lives, black lives. Please do not change the conversation by talking about how your life matters, too. It does, but we need less watered-down unity and a more active solidarity with us, black people, unwaveringly, in defense of our humanity. Our collective futures depend upon it, end quote. Denouncing heteropatriarchy, Garza describes the adaptation of her clever online catchphrase, Black Lives Matter, by others. Brown Lives Matter, Migrant Lives Matter, Women's Lives Matter, and on and on. And Garza's dismissive words as, quote, the theft of black queer women work. Perhaps, she added, quote, if we were the charismatic black men many are rallying around these days, it would have been a different story, end quote. From a leftist perspective, this struck me as alarming. Why the prickly, hyper-identity, politicized, and proprietary attachment to the, quote, lives matter phrase? Garza seemed more interested in brand value and narrow identity than social justice. Did she want a licensing fee? Wouldn't any serious leftist people's activist eagerly give the catchy lives matter phrase away to all oppressed people and hope for their wide and inclusive use in a viciously capitalist society that has subjected everything and everyone to the soulless logic of commodity rule, profit, and exchange value? Who are these charismatic black men many are rallying around in the fall of 2014? And how representative were Garza's slaps at heteropatriarchy and charismatic black men of the black community in whose name she spoke? Would it be too heteropatriarchal of me, I wondered, to suggest that many black male or two with experience of oppression in the nation's racist criminal justice system ought to share some space front and center in a movement focused especially on a police and prison state that targets black boys and men all above all? I defended the phrase Black Lives Matter against the absurd charge that it is racist, but I couldn't help but wonder about the left progressive credentials of anyone who gets upset that others would want to have a conversation about how their lives matter too. Is there really something wrong with a marginalized Native American laborer or a white and not so skin-privileged former factory worker struggling with sickness and poverty, wanting to hear that his or her life matters? For any remotely serious progressive, was there anything mysterious about the fact that many white folks facing foreclosure, job loss, poverty wages, and the like might not be doing cartwheels over the phrase Black Lives Matter when they experience the harsh daily reality that their lives don't matter under the profit system? My concerns about Black Lives Matter's potential service to the capitalist elite were reactivated when I heard a talk of Garza's fellow Black Lives Matter, Patrice Cullors, another veteran nonprofit careerist. Cullors spoke before hundreds of cheering white liberals and progressives in downtown Iowa City in February. Quote, "We are witnessing the erosion of U.S. democracy," she said, adding that Donald Trump is, quote, "is building a police state," relating that she had gone into, quote, "two-week depression" after Hillary Clinton was defeated by Trump. Cullors said she wondered if Black Lives Matter had, quote, "done enough to educate people about the differences between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton." She described Trump as a fascist. Surely, I thought, Cullors knew that the United States had been in the grip of a finance-led corporate oligarchy and had been building a militarized police state for many years now, under Barack Obama as well as George Bush and others. Certainly, I hope, she understood that the erosion of democracy and the construction of a racist police state had been underway since long before Trump took up residence in the White House. Surely, I felt, Cullors knew that the Clintons were vicious corporate racists who kicked millions of black women and children off federal public assistance while advancing racially disparate mass incarceration with her horrific three-strikes crime bill, which Bill Clinton later admitted he regretted. Cullors said nothing in her talk about the problem of class rule and the plight of the multiracial working class, which includes white workers. Surely, I reflected, she knew that a lying neoliberal warmonger, the apt description of Hillary Clinton by the black leftist political scientist Adolf Reed Jr., lost to a, quote, fascist because of her captivity to the nation's corporate and financial elite, which has abandoned the white and multiracial working class in the neoliberal era, 1975 to the present. Thanks to her captivity, political, economic, ideological, and even cultural in nature, the inauthentic opposition party, the late political theorist Sheldon Wolin's dead-on description of the dismal dollar Democrats, has suppressed the lower working class vote and handed the majority of the active white working class electorate to the white nationalist Republican Party. It's an old story. This would not have been all that tough a point to make in Iowa City, where voters, young ones above all, went mad for Bernie Sanders, the self-described Democratic Socialist who ran against the corporate and financial plutocracy and likely would have defeated Donald Trump in the general election had the corporate Democrats not rigged the nomination on behalf of Clinton. If Cullors was reconsidering her stance on and within the major party politics during the last electoral cycle, I wondered, did she think the Black Lives Matter, quote, did enough to educate people about the difference between a racist, imperial, and militantly neoliberal candidate like Hillary Clinton and a semi-social Democrat, anti-neoliberal candidate like Sanders? And what about third parties? Did Black Lives Matter try to tell people about Jill Stein of the Green Party and their platform, which advocated such common sense revolutionary reforms as giant peace divided to find planet-saving green jobs programs, single-payer health insurance, and massive social reconstruction programs in the nation's ghettos and barrios and reservations? As the legendary young Chicago Black Panther Fred Hampton explained in a 1969 speech, quote, "We got to face some facts, that the masses are poor, that the masses belong to what you call the lower class. And when I talk about the masses, I'm talking about the white masses. I'm talking about the black masses and the brown masses and the yellow masses, too. We've got to face the fact that some people say you fight fire best with fire, but we say you put fire out best with water. We say you don't fight racism with racism. We're going to fight racism with solidarity. You say you don't fight capitalism with no black capitalism. You fight capitalism with socialism. Well, Hampton and his cohorts encouraged and assisted poor and working class white radicals in the organization of such leftist hillbilly nationalist organizations as the Young Patriots organizations in Chicago and Rise Up Angry in Chicago, and the October 4th organization in Philadelphia, and the White Lightning in the Bronx. Among with their well-known practice of policing the police with armed self-defense of occupied black ghettos, the Panthers' model included a direct serve-the-people approach that reached thousands of poor black neighborhoods, families each day. So that was inclusiveness. It's not for nothing that the Panthers faced fierce repression from the American state, including the chilling police state execution of Fred Hampton in a raid organized by Cook County State's Attorney Ed Hanoran in December 1979. Mention of the Black Panthers could elicit raised eyebrows from feminists because of the party's reputation for hypermasculinism. However, the Combahee River Collective, a black female-led feminist coalition that became the left wing of the 1970s women's movement, shared the organization's commitment to radical social and political transformation beyond racial equality alone. Now, when we look at all this, Black Lives Matter, founded by three veteran professional class non-profit activists and fundraisers, with a long prior close ties to corporations and foundations and academia and government-sponsored agencies, poses no comparable threat to the establishment order. It expertly marketed slogans like Black Lives Matter and Hands Up, Don't Shoot are defensive and pale reflections of black power and power to the people. Black Lives Matter has little, if any, direct service relationships with the poor black communities in whose name it speaks. It does not call for broad-based popular rebellion against the combined and interrelated oppression structures of racism, capitalism, imperialism, and patriarchy. In December, it openly took up the cause of black capitalism, partnering with the Fortune 500 advertising agency J. Walter Thompson to produce a national black business database. In February, Black Lives Matter marketed Black History Month by marketing a black debit card, the Amer Visa debit card, with One United Bank, the largest black-owned bank in the United States. All this and more might surprise many of the progressives who eagerly embrace the Black Lives Matter brand in the name of fighting racist police violence. The U.S. ruling class, whose capitalist system is the historical midwife of modern racism, is not threatened by the radicalists and black capitalists, Black Lives Matter. But just to make sure that black anger is kept within safe political boundaries, a critical cash-rich arm of concentrated wealth agreed last year to lavishly fund the group and a significant number of black middle-class-led policy and advocacy groups coming into and under its rubric. In fact, when I first heard that Black Lives Matter had scored $100 million a grant from the Ford Foundation and other elite philanthropic capitalists, including Hill Snowden Foundation, the Novo Foundation, J.P. Morgan Chase, and the Kellogg Foundation, I wrote it off as fake news from the right-wing noise machine. The story struck me as too perfect a match for the Republican and white nationalist narrative that black protesters were in pay to the evil liberal and elite left. It seemed too perfectly timed for the election season and too close a fit for Trump and Steve Bannon's racist, fake, populist, liberal, left bashing. But the story checked out. The remarkable grant, a vast sum of money off the charts of normal foundation giving, was a matter of public record. Fortune magazine wrote that the gift, quote, would make anyone sit up straighter if they read it in a pitch deck. And by the way, it was a curious statement. A pitch deck is a presentation venue for startup businesses seeking investor backing. On the day of the presidential election last year, Huffington Post posted a report entitled Black Lives Matter, a Catalyst for Philanthropic Change, penned by a nonprofit industrial complex veteran. The authors, Leora Norwich, celebrated the historic grant as an example of, quote, social justice philanthropy, and held it as a marking a noble and laudable shift. Well, rife with telling caveats and qualifications, Norwich has claimed that the foundation had no interest in keeping Black Lives Matter safe for the rich and the white was naive. It's just the opposite. The Ford Foundation, one of the most powerful private foundations in the world with close ties to Wall Street and the U.S. government, receives the bulk of its endowment from corporate contributors and very wealthy donors through trusts and bequeathments. The Ford Foundation has for years maintained close ties to U.S. military and intelligence agencies. Its board of directors is a who's who of powerful corporate players, including CEOs and Wall Street lawyers. The contribution of such an immense sum of money, $100 million, is a gift from the ruling class that will allow Black Lives Matter to construct a bureaucracy of salaried staff and lobbyist positions. The influx of money will bring the movement greater influence through campaign contributions and integrate it more closely with the Democratic Party and the corporate media. By the World Socialist Web reckoning, the grant was a capitalist investment in the time-worn ruling class game of racial divide and rule tactics. Quote, the $100 million gift is an acknowledgement by a powerful section of the ruling class that the aims of the Black Lives Matter movement are aligned with those of Wall Street and the U.S. government. And there's more, but we're out of time. So this is all from the author, investigative journalist, and a person very respected within the left and progressive causes, Paul Street. Make of it what you will, but in this current climate, will he be allowed to keep that article alive, or will he be challenged and his article expunged, because that's a truth that is too searing to allow in a politically correct world? I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening.